nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Future applications, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a real controversial talk, and I'll try to show that the future for cloaking technology in particular and for metamaterials is really bright and interesting. So, of course, by now we are familiar with this classic experiment by David Smith, inspired by John Pendry's theory. And of course, you can do cloaking this kind of difficult way by making all kind of nice elements. And of course, in the visible region, it would be really, really difficult. And you can do cloaking easier way, also based on transformation optics. In fact, like 3 years ago, we published a paper with Vlad Shalayev, Alex Kildyshev, and my wife, demonstrated that actually you can do transformation from a plane slab filled with some kind of anisotropic epsilon and mu into a curvilinear slab filled with vacuum and achieve the same result. And in fact, if you are talking about distribution of epsilon and mu required for cloaking, it appears that a gap between a metal-coated sphere and a metal-coated glass slide would be quite a good approximation for a cloaking potential. And again, it's an old result, but it's very easy to explain qualitatively. Let's say in cloaking, you want all your rays to go like this. Okay, so all the optical paths along these lines must be constant. Therefore, effective refractive index here must be zero. And of course, in a waveguide near cutoff, this is exactly what you're going to do. So basically, it's very easy to understand this result. And of course, we did the experiment. It was published in PRL. Here is a graph. Oh, no, it's a new reference already. So the experiment looked like this. So we put a gold coating on a lens, put it on top of glass slides, and in the laser beam, and this area was cloaked. And of course, now we want to extend this experiment and make lots of cloaks. You can take an array, a microlens array, which has like hundreds of thousands of lenses, and make an array of cloak. And of course, an inspiration for us was this particular futuristic application. In the future, every soldier is supposed to be equipped. No pictures, by the way. I'm not allowed to talk about it. Every soldier is going to be equipped with a visibility cloak. And of course, when they, ideally, but they all deploy the clocks, it must look something like this. But of course, there are problems in this approach, and this problem is very easy to understand. Basically, the geometry of cloaking is cylindrical, okay? So basically, if you send light along the rows, you're not breaking the symmetry, and the cloaking is supposed to work really well for everybody. However, no clock is perfect. So if you put light at the same light at an angle, basically you will be able to see scattering. And actually this is a good way to test performance of a cloak. An individual cloak may be good enough, but an array of cloaks may not be good enough. Okay, and that's exactly what we saw in the recent experiment. So basically we took a commercially available microlens array, and depending on the size, it would have like between 25,000 and 100,000 small lenses. Coated with gold, this is a picture, just a small portion of it. So the pitch is 30 micron, the microlens radius is 42 micron, and then we send light along the rows, and you see it indeed goes all around the clocked areas in accordance with theory. However, if you try to rotate the array, then you see this symmetry breaking and lots of scattering appears. So, from the beginning, by design, our cloak was not perfect. We know that the spherical surface is only an approximation. So it's nice to see it in the experiment. And of course, we can actually present a Moore's law for cloaking. I'm used to Moore's law. So at this plot, I put number of cloaks built per year in a given year since 2006. In 2012, this jumps by like five orders of magnitude. And of course, I double check. This plot shows the the cost of cloak, and I double-checked the starting point with David Smith this morning. He confirmed that if you take into account his salary, material cost, the salary of his grad students, you are in the roughly like 100,000 range or more. So right now, what we are doing here, this data point, we buy a background array, which costs like 100 euro, okay, and we create 100,000 cloaks, so the cost per cloak goes to like 1/1000th of a dollar, which is quite good. So this slide clearly demonstrates that future is bright for cloaking technology in the area of mass production. And of course, more realistic application for something like this is to do like a multi-channel fluorescence sensor array. In DNA assays, people are interested in detecting fluorescence from each area, and basically positioned, in regular arrays. So you can actually put one cloak over every sensor. And actually, because light is stopped near the cloaked area, there is enhancement of fluorescence, which we clearly see. And moreover, it's not only enhancement of fluorescence, you can specially separate different wavelengths. So it's kind of a microscopy on a chip and, this enhanced sensitivity. So the future is bright for cloaking technology, as I demonstrated. And now I want to switch to other applications. Actually, I'm going to show that the concept of medium materials has brought up implications in such areas as high energy physics and cosmology. It's actually very easy to understand. In 2011, Maxim Chernadub published this very nice work. He proved that if you subject vacuum to very strong magnetic field, it would develop this lattice of abrikosov of superconducting vortices. And actually, this concept, this result is very easy to understand. You just look at Hamiltonian of a particle with spin S in a applied magnetic field, and you immediately see that when spin is high, even spin equal to one is good enough. The ground state, which is obtained at n equal 0, when s is 1, the ground state goes down with applied magnetic field. So if you start with a particle like chromosome, which is composed of two quarks and spin 1, and normally it's unstable. When you apply strong electromagnetic field... At zero temperature. If you apply this kind of magnetic field, the energy goes to zero, and it's actually a very well-known instability in high-energy physics. So that's what is supposed to happen. The chromosomes become stable, and they form this abrikosov of lattice. And in fact, zero temperature vacuum can be either in superconducting or in dielectric state. So it's actually a perfect hyperbolic metamaterial, which I demonstrated in a paper published a few months after that work. Basically, there is absolutely no conductivity perpendicular to superconducting vortices, because basically it's a symmetry requirement. Vacuum must behave like this. And perfect conductivity along vortices. So you are having a perfect hyperbolic metamaterial. So and again, it's just a demo of the concept. So on one side, you have typical hyperbolic metamaterial. On another side, you have this picture of chromosome vortices. And in fact, in a follow-up paper, which is about to be published in the June issue of PhysRevD, I demonstrate that it's actually quite an interesting concept with interesting implications. So basically, if I go back to this slide, the typical magnetic fields which people create at the Large Hadron Collider, basically, you consider like two nuclei which you smack against each other. It's very easy to calculate magnetic fields, and at the current energy of Large Hadron Collider, you're getting exactly the 10 to the 16th Tesla, exactly the right order of magnitude. But you want to know if you create something like this or not, and it would be very interesting to detect. And in fact, what you can do, you can do a very simple thing. Basically, it is a very well-known fact that these hyperbolic metamaterials demonstrate a special dispersion, and they demonstrate this additional wave. Again, it's very easy. So basically, this is epsilon z written with dispersion, and then you have this nonlinear, instead of normal linear equation, you have nonlinear equation, and there would be additional solution. So this additional solution is plotted here. So this is normal wave as a function of field, and this is this additional wave. And it appears that this additional wave has energy on the scale of 2 giga electron volt. So basically, if you create something like this at the Large Hadron Collider, and you want to detect it, basically you want to look for additional particle jets at 2 giga electron volt. So this is about to be published in PhysRevD.
And if you apply the Moore's law to this, it would be the most expensive hyperbolic metamaterial.
Well, it's true, but it's an ideal hyperbolic metamaterial. It's the best hyperbolic metamaterial possible. Yeah, the most expensive one, yes. So, okay, I have time. Now about potential cosmological implications of the concept. This is familiar by now. This is Maxwell equation for hyperbolic metamaterial. Normally this epsilon was positive, but in hyperbolic metamaterial, one of them is negative. And you can actually do very trivial thing. You just rewrite this Maxwell equation in the form which would correspond to 2 plus 1 Minkowski space. I mean, Clayton Gordon equation in 2 plus 1 Minkowski space. And in fact, you forget about time, because you are in time harmonic, you're dealing with time harmonic waves. So nothing depends on time. But a special current like Z may become your like time-like variable. So, and then again, the concept is very simple. You're not gaining much yet. You can make this hyperbolic material, and you see like word lines, which are straight line, nothing special happened. But then you can curve your hyperbolic metamaterial. In fact, you are curving Minkowski space, and you create kind of an equivalent of a metric of a Big Bang. So this is how people typically draw word lines of individual particles near the Big Bang, and this is the light propagation in the hyperlens. So in fact, this particular experiment in the hyperlens radius is in fact behaves as a time-like variable. So you have like beginning of time, and then something goes on from there. And of course, you can even do a little bit more sophisticated experiments. You can try and check if cosmological error of time behaves the same way as a statistical error of time. Of course, you can introduce, in a linear system, you can introduce a little bit of disorder and it's trivial. But of course, a similar experiment done in a nonlinear optical system would be quite interesting when this individual word lines interact with each other. So we know how to make this Minkowski space. So I'll tell you that actually physics at the boundaries of this Minkowski space is also quite interesting. You can create equivalent of black hole. You can create Minkowski domain walls, and you can create kind of end of time situation. And again, it's quite trivial actually. So let's start with this end of time situation. Okay, on this side you have hyperbolic metamaterial in which Z is time-like. Okay, and then over here you have normal dielectric, maybe anisotropic, but epsilon Z is now positive. Okay, so this your axis of Z is not time-like anymore. So literally, time ends at this interface. So you can actually write down Maxwell equation and study what happens at the end of time. actually, we did it with Evgeny Narimanov. This is his plot. In fact, it's quite interesting that you cannot have end of time without some kind of disaster. Typically, fields diverge at the end of time. Now, of course, another interesting situation is, you have Minkowski space on one side, and you rotate your hyperbolic metamaterial, you have a differently oriented Minkowski space on the other time. Let's say, on this side, the time-like direction is pointing towards interface, on this side, it points towards It is parallel to the interface. So basically, you rotated the Minkowski space. And again, it's quite an unusual situation. You know, we are not dealing with these situations in normal life, but people in cosmology do it all the time. You know, there is a word for it, it's called Minkowski domain wall. Some people even believe that, you know, when two universes collide, something like this happens. Okay, now, and of course, black holes, if you look at the interface between, I mean, you point this time-like direction this way, okay, and then basically over here it would be anisotropic metal. So, but your time-like direction points this way. So it's very easy to demonstrate that in some way the potential here, which is experienced by extraordinary photons, is very similar to potential experienced by normal particles near a black hole. And in fact, it's, we are building a better black hole this way because its area is quantized. And it's actually a trivial, kind of trivial fact because, okay, you're making it out of this lattice of metal wires. And of course, the number of wires may only be integer. Therefore, the area of a black hole is quantized in terms of this unit lattice area. And it's trivial. However, if you make a black hole from this hyperbolic vacuum state, when the periodicity is defined by Abrikosov lattice, it's less trivial. It's indeed a quantum electromagnetic black hole. Well, and I guess, yeah, we can build this stuff in the lab and indeed see some of these divergences. So I guess I can stop. I left myself 10 minutes to answer questions. I hope there will be many.